Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am joined by Poppy Delbridge, TV exec and founder of Rapid Tapping. Hello, welcome to the Divorce Club.
Hello there. I'm happy to be here, I think.
Are you? Why are you unsure?
Oh, well, I think this is sort of like, you know, for me, this is just going to be one hell of an interesting therapy session, I think. You know.
Well, you're very welcome and you don't have to pay me.
Oh, thank you.
So you are divorced. How do you feel when I say that to you?
I feel very relieved. I feel all right about it. You know, I was divorced a long time ago. So I started things pretty young. I mean, almost too young, really. How they let me do it, I don't know. But I was 18 when I got married.
Wow.
Don't know if you know that. Mm. And I was married to my first love. And then we split up at 10 years later. So actually, not bad. 10 years running in a marriage. But what happened to me was, obviously, I was then in my late 20s, starting all over again. Also as a mum. Quite young mum working in telly. So that was my sort of chapter of life, and I sort of see it as chapters. So it makes me feel like, well, I had that chapter of my life and now that chapter is done. And there is a sense of relief with that, but also not any horrible animosity, actually, surprisingly, now you say it to me.
I think that's a good place to be. So getting married so young, as you say, what do you think your mindset was at that time? Did you have an upbringing that marriage was really important, or were you just super in love and you wanted to get married?
Well, I was brought up in Cornwall. In Cornwall, certainly in my group of friends, that was sort of what people did. You sort of looked around and you sort of went, they're all right, and you sort of married them. But I suppose for me, it was important. Yeah, it was important. And we actually didn't do the whole, like, you know, we didn't go, well, actually, no, I was going to say we didn't do the whole 2.4 children thing, but sort of did, actually. So went away to university together, bought a house, like peanuts, that was repossessed, you know, living in not the best area, but did it up, renovated it throughout uni, had married life, worked in a cocktail bar, did my degree, had our baby.
I like that you talk about things and it's all very straightforward and sort of no, there's no emotion involved. It's like this happened, this happened, this happened. But what was it like to go to uni and be married? Because that must have, you must have been a rarity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so weird. I mean, it was funny because nobody was married, obviously. And certainly nobody was pregnant. Certainly not as big as I got. Because I also looked about 10 years old. I mean, this is the thing. I looked really young. So it was different. It was really different. But for me, it sort of felt like, you know, it wasn't weird. It just happened to be weird in that place that we went to. But because all of our friends, you know, it wasn't particularly weird where we were from, it just sort of felt that that was normal, you know? Even though as soon as I started working in the real world in London, in television, people were like choking on their food every time I said it. What? You're married? What? You got a kid? What? Like it just didn't compute. So, yeah, I mean, there's no denying it was weird.
Because I got married just before I was 30. And I remember people reacting to me like, oh, my God, you're so young. I can't believe you're married. Like really shocked really? Constantly. So I can't imagine being at uni and like the reactions from, because some of the people at my uni were very immature. So they must have been like, marriage, what's that? But what was it like? Because uni are meant to be, well, they're kind of seen as your party days, aren't they? Where you like go out every night and then go hungover to lectures. But you were married and pregnant. So do you think that affected your university experience?
Yes and no. I wasn't going out, you know, pregnant, lashing out on the town. But I didn't feel like I missed out. I also found it a bit boring. Found it all a bit boring, actually, back then. Don't get me wrong, I made up for it, for sure. You know, once I started telly stuff, I had a Friday night. I had the Friday night pass, gold dust, you know, where I would definitely go out and get as drunk as I possibly could on a Friday night. Feel really sick and go back home. And actually, because I was so young, I felt fine the next day. But I made up for it. But no, in university, I just didn't, to be honest, no, I don't remember looking back and going, I didn't like this, because I quite liked, oh God, tell you what else I had, a house rabbit. I had a bloody house rabbit.
Sure.
It's so weird, isn't it? Now I look back, I think, God, Alfie, the house rabbit. So we had a house rabbit. We were doing up a repossessed house. You know, I lived next door to some guy who was basically a stalker. The other guy was a drug addict. It wasn't that fun, but when we got inside our doors, it was lovely. It was nice. It was all right.
Sounds like you were dealing with a lot, though, at that time.
Oh, God, so much, yeah. So much during that time.
Do you think it affected your mental health at that time, dealing with all those things? Or do you think because you were young, you were just like, this is life and I'm just going to get on with it?
I think it definitely did. I think because I moved away from home, I was in an area I didn't know, sort of playing house, really. Being pregnant. During that time also, my dad died, who I was really close to.
Wow.
That was hard, very, very hard. You know, it for me, I look back at that and think, God, how did I... Then my grandma died. I was really close to her because my dad was ill when I was growing up, so I lived with her a lot. And all these things like pow, 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 you know, highs and lows, certainly emotional. And I think the thing that I remember was feeling really lonely, actually, in my marriage. And that was sad because I was so young, I didn't realise I had married someone who didn't show emotion and couldn't really deal with it. But, you know, me, I mean, God, I'm all about emotions. I work with people's emotions now. You know, I go to emotional places and shift them. And that's what I remember now, just dealing with it. You know, it's probably why I do what I do now in the you know, well-being and emotional health, because I think a lot of people have loneliest times when they're with someone, and that is not a good place to be.
I was just going to say, I think that's such a relatable scenario. I remember because my dad died just as we got married. So we had a small ceremony with him there, but then the big planned wedding, he wasn't there for. And I remember going through the grief of that. I say now, I think it accelerated the divorce, me realizing that I wasn't happy in the marriage. But that feeling of being alone in my marriage was strong. And I think it's because, yeah, you're going through so much emotion. And if you're not sort of quite connected to the other person in the right way, and you feel like they're not there for you in the way that you need, it can really, well, for me, it really created this extra kind of chasm between us. So I was, 30s. I can't imagine going through that when you're 18. But you're at university, you've got a house rabbit, you're married,
Yeah. You're
having a baby, all of this grief happens.
Yeah.
And then you still stay together for 10 years. Mm. So what age were you when you separated?
So I believe I was 29. 28, 29.
Yeah, so really like a decade of your early life. And do you remember your feeling when you hit 29 and you were, about to separate from your marriage and you have a son now? Mm. How did that hit you emotionally and physically?
Oh my God, just like an absolute ton of bricks. Because I think this is what I've kind of got from other people that I've worked with who've gone through similar things, is that you hold a lot within. And, that time for me was a complete epiphany. Like my entire life changed at 28, 29. I completely rebuilt myself. And the shock of having to pretty much, if you imagine, this is my entire identity from the age of 16, being with this person who ended up being a bit of a rot bag, actually. I was furious because I felt like so long I had dealt with that, because I was married and I had my son and I was sticking with it. And there were times when I really didn't want to stick with it, but I stuck with it. And I think I could see myself at the moment when it all kind of kicked off, looking back and going, oh my God, what were you doing this whole time? And now I sort of think, God, at that point, no, it was awful. I remember it really clearly. And now I go, oh my God, what an absolute savior he was to be the one that in the end messed it up, because I wasn't happy and I carried on. And so now I've got this real thing for people where I see they're stuck and, you sometimes need that catastrophe or you need that catalyst to wake yourself up.
It's so nice that you talk about it in such a positive way. Now, I think a lot of people listening will be at that really difficult stage. And so it's nice to hear the kind of future and hope that they will also have a similar view of things. Do you remember that time just after you'd separated? I talk about kind of low moments on the podcast and I always seem to cry on kitchen floors. That's my thing. Do you remember like a hardest time in that kind of breakup period?
I mean, the hardest time would have been probably more related to my son. Because my ex all checked out, completely checked out of all kind of responsibility and sort of, I had to actually, I remember we sat down to tell him, heartbreaking. I had to do it. And I thought, what a flipping, honestly, I'm sitting here doing that bit I should not be doing. And that was really tough. And then other things, I remember going out and getting really drunk. All the things that you do when you're just like, whoa, my life. And that was a low moment. I sort of remember, not pleasant things, where the dawning realization of what you've put up with for a long time, coupled with then, their animosity, and it was just all a bit like, ugh. But I think there's so many of them at that time when everything disintegrates, that they kind of roll into one, and you just have this sort of numb feeling. I just remember, do you remember that? Like a sort of numbness. It's like, oh my God, this is happening, you know, it's numb, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I remember thinking this constant phrase of, oh my God, this is my life, you know, in that really bad time where you're like, this is actually happening and it feels like it should be happening to someone else and not me.
Yeah.
But you talk about rebuilding your life, and how did you go about doing that? What did you find useful at that time?
A couple of things. So first thing is, I actually pretty much went blind around the same time, just before. I woke up with this thing with my eyes and they just went bloodshot. And then they started to burn. Then my face went all burnt. And it was horrific. I mean, it was like Moorfields Hospital, blah, blah, blah. You know, brain scans, what's wrong with her? And it's interesting because I was like, why is this happening? And I remember thinking, why is this happening? And all I could do was sit in a dark room. I couldn't do anything, sit in the dark room and listen to audiobooks. So I started thinking, at this point in my life, I'm pretty low. It got lower because I remember he had gone somewhere for work, worked in music, and come back, and, you know, bearing in mind I'd had all these people helping me out, he came back, and on the first two nights he went to band practice, and I was like in shock and thought, this is done. And then I had a dream that something had happened, and I was correct. I dreamt the whole thing. Like a flipping prophet.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a mania time because I was like, this is strange. And then I started to read every book under the sun, you know, like you do, on self-help, mindset, all of it. But this stuff wasn't new to me because I've been doing it for years, actually. I just, you know, lapsed a bit on certain things. And my life rebuilt at the moment that I totally took my power again, and I started changing the way I thought completely. So rather than saying, I hate my marriage, I can't stand this, I'm unhappy, rather than thinking those things, rather than dwelling in those things, I made a real decision to go, well, what have I got to lose? I'm going to completely change the way that I structure my mind. And so I started looking in all things neuroscience, holistic health, spiritual, all of it. And and I was pretty spiritual anyway, actually, at the time. And then I woke
You're
up.
You're a prophet.
I'm a prophet. No, don't say that.
So like you need to be pretty spiritual.
But that was freaking, that was the weirdest thing, that I actually dreamt it and it happened. I mean, that was spooky. But
that is spooky.
That's done, you know. I was like, oh, that's a sign. Get out of this.
So what happened with the blindness? So you're starting to go blind, you're sitting in dark rooms. Was that brought on by the stress that you were going through?
I think it is. I think it was because, you know, we are part of a mind body. You know, our brain, this is what I do now, but our brain does message and signal to our body certain things. And I decided to do visualizations around me having perfect eyesight again. And I did that because my dad, who I mentioned, had cancer most of his life, but did similar practices. And so he taught me everything. And he lived with stage four, very, very severe cancer, against all the odds for years and years and years and years and years, very healthily. And so for me, that was in my blood, you know, it was in my framework, it's how I was brought up. So I was like, right, let's do it. And then, yeah, it was unexplainable, blah, 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 and it went. And so that's how that happened. And then I sort of thought, well, I've got to roll this out across all my life. And then I focused on it. And I believe that did open up this whole new world for me.
So they couldn't explain why you'd gone, started to go blind for a bit, and now you're fine?
Yeah, yeah, had all these, wow. had all these things, and then had all these different eye experts, and they were like, don't know, MRI scans and whatnot. Yeah, it's I mean, I look at it like that's completely normal now, funny enough, because I've done it with lots of things in my health and lots of things in my life. I've been diagnosed with loads of different things that have gone. So for me, that's not it. Yeah. But I know when I say that to people, they're like, what?
Yeah, because you talk about it so matter of factly. And I'm like, hang on. Whoa. You know, you're going through a divorce and then you think you're going to go blind and you're a single parent. What was that time like when you, because I know you said that you changed your mindset and, you know, overcame it in an amazing way. But what was that like when you were sitting in the dark thinking I'm losing my eyesight and I'm a single parent?
Well, you know, that was just before the marriage ended. So at that point, all I was focusing on was being happy again and the realization that I wasn't, and not getting what I needed and not getting my needs met and not having any emotional support ever. And I just was really resolute that all I was going to do was to focus for a while on how I felt about me. And I remember not feeling sad or anything other than I am focusing on this and I'm completely committed to this. So I remember after that point, honestly, I feel like, yeah, everything changed, because it was that kind of all-in commitment. And I think that was another godsend, because I had all that time off work to really restructure what I wanted, visualize it, do all my crazy woo-woo things that I do now, tapping, all of it, and change.
I love that, because I weirdly, on Boxing Day, dislocated my knee, yay, by falling down the stairs.
Oh.
But weirdly, it came at a time when because my divorce, I'm literally only just divorced. And it's been dragging on for over 2 years. And at that Christmas, the recent Christmas, it was like all the divorce paperwork and everything and the discussions were really coming to a head. And I was finding it really stressful. And I was, you know, I've taken over the house now, but it was at that point of like, oh, is it all going to go through? And I feel like half of me, you know, dislocating my knee was my body saying, we have to just stop for a second and look after ourselves. Yeah. And actually, when it happened, it was like an extra low, because I was like, I'm divorced and alone and I'm dislocating my knee so I can't even walk and we're in lockdown. But it actually forced me to kind of deal with some of my emotions and just take a break and think about me. Mm. And so I do think it's really interesting, those health things linked to trauma.
Oh, yeah.
That force you to take a breath.
Yeah, it absolutely. You know, that's your, I see them as clues, you know. When something needs to be cleared emotionally, I see the body as a clue or manifestation of that trapped emotion within the energy body and within certain triggers within the brain, the amygdala that holds the stress and the fight or flight response. And so if we can see, which for many years I didn't, if you can see that is just a kind way, in a way, for you to look at that emotion and then shift that emotion, then that's great. But I would say that most of us are taught, probably just by medicine, that, you know, it's completely unrelated. So I think if anyone's feeling the physical manifestations of something, don't be afraid of that. It's almost like you're wise unconscious going, right, let's deal with this, shall we? Let's deal with this.
So you got through the blindness, the breakup.
Yeah.
You're now a single mum. In your late 20s, going into the world of dating and all of that, how did you approach all of that? Were you dating and looking for love, or were you just putting that to one side?
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, I had not, I'll be very honest with you, I've been with this guy since I was 16. And now, fast forward all those years, I'm suddenly like, whoa, somebody else's penis.
Yeah, I remember
right?
that.
I was like, what on earth? Right? Because I was like, okay. And I feel at the time, I think I was excited about the prospect of it. But at the same time, I wasn't like going, I didn't go on dating apps or anything like that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I wasn't the typical person who went out and got, you know, right, I'll have you. I wasn't that, actually.
Well, I was that.
Yeah. But yeah, you were. So you can make up for it for me.
Yeah, I had a complete sexual explosion, I always call it, where I just got very excited about the prospect of having sex with new people and that they like fancied me, wanted to have sex with me. And it was all this like... joyful orgasm world. But yeah, do you remember that sex for the first time? Because I remember worrying that I'd cry during the first sex.
Cry? That's hilarious. Did you cry?
No. So I like, but I like scheduled, I remember like I set it up with someone that I felt like comfortable with. So I sort of knew them a bit just in case I would cry.
Did you?
Yeah. But so it wasn't like a stranger.
Oh, right. God, Isn't that more awkward?
Well, no, because they'd fancied me for ages. So it was okay. More like, this is in the bag. And if I cry, that is fine. But do you remember your approach to that first sexual experience? Were you like excited or scared or all of those things?
Oh my God. I remember an awakening of dressing a little bit like a prostitute for a while. Definitely did that.
Well, is it like a prostitute or is it just loving your body and showing it off?
Oh no, I definitely dress like a prostitute. But I do anyway, actually, thinking about it. I've got like this tendency to just be a little bit more like, I'll wear what I want. I've always been like that. I've always worn inappropriate clothing to different events. Even at work, I would be like wearing a long dress, like a gown during like a show. People are like, Poppy, what are you doing? I'm like, this is what I'm wearing. So that was part of my identity. I love clothes. But I do remember wearing things that were maybe a little bit more, hey. And I think it was because I was like, yeah, fuck it, my body. I was like, I remember at the time going, yeah, you know, me 28, you know, things are all right. Got a good job, got like good friends, you know, I'm all right. There was a moment in it, probably everyone has this, when you do split up with someone, I mean, God, bear in mind, mine has been 12 years. You feel like you're just entering this kind of, you know, just out of the womb phase where everything feels a bit like amplified. So all the emotions are heavy or massively brilliant. You know, that everything is amplified. I do remember that.
Yeah, I definitely remember that. And I remember, yeah, getting my body out again as a thing. Yeah. Like, I totally agree. I mean, I've always worn some people would call them inappropriate. I just call them clothes. But yeah, like I remember I wore a really low cut top to a book, to a meeting about a children's book. And someone made a comment. I was like, well, children's authors have tits too.
Because children need tits, you could argue.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeps them alive.
But yeah, I definitely remember like, my foray into fashion sort of changed a bit. Like instead of, I think I got quite like wifey, in inverted commas, in my fashion when I was married, because I was imagining this type of woman I had to be and like what that woman would wear. And then when I got divorced, I kind of went back to me, but on the way I sort of, yeah, wore some skimpy tight things, or like more, I guess, younger, again in inverted commas,
yeah,
things. I gave them a go and then found out what worked for me, and I love my boobs, I found out, so everything will show them off.
Yeah.
So I love that you think you always dress inappropriately. Right now you look lovely, you're wearing a wrap dress, it looks very nice. Do you think that was something that you did in your marriage as well? Or was it a kind of an awakening after the divorce?
Oh, no. Do you know what? I'd always done it. So that was no different, I think. Definitely wasn't a kind of reaction. I had always done it. I mean, anyone would tell you that I would dress it appropriately throughout my life. I think it's my parents did. It's sort of in Cornwall, but they were the first two that had like fluorescent shell suits walking down the street. It was like, oh my God. So like my mum would make clothes, dress me like as a boy, or like a crazy little gown that I'd wear. So I always enjoyed clothes, you know. So that wasn't to do with the old D word.
Divorce or dick or both?
Well, both.
Yeah.
Interchangeable.
I'm just imagining you as like a really cold teenager in Cornwall wearing like short skirts and t-shirts.
Oh, that was me. I actually wore suspenders to I remember once I was wearing short skirt, knee-high boots, suspenders because I liked them, sort of jacket thing, tailored jacket, and I was off to college, you know, I was off to college, my grammar school. I drive in and, you know, other people were just wearing jeans and like hoodies, you know, chill out, Poppy. But I remember me and some of my friends were like, this is the way we dress. You know, I was dressing in vintage clothes back then. I was totally inappropriate. It's quite interesting to look back at that now with you and go, yeah, I've always been a bit like that.
I love that. So after your divorce, what do you think? So you're, you know, finding yourself having some nice love trysts. What do you think you found really helpful at that time? Was there anything that, you know, your family or friends did around you or that you did? I'm just thinking if someone's listening and then they're in that moment, what helped you?
I'd say, you know, a real tangible tool and a tip for me was tapping, which my mum got me into then. It really helped me. Yeah, I thought it was stupid at the time. I remember thinking, gosh, I'm not going to tap on my head and say how I feel. But it worked. And so I think, well, that's why I set up rapid tapping, you know, because I know it works. So I think when you're going through something as painful as something like divorce or, you know, a breakup, which affects so many layers of your identity and your emotional state, yes, you need the support from your friends. Yes, you need the things that make you feel good. Yes, you need the bath and the self-care and all of that. But I think the thing that made me most that allowed me to rebuild were tools, you know, that now I obviously teach. So tapping for me was massive, you know, and mindset work was massive. Doing that inner work was big and more beneficial to me than talking. So talking was great, gave me some awareness, it helped me, but I wanted the stuff. Oh, I wanted to rewire.
And can you explain what tapping is? Because I did one of your sessions and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And that's how I found you. But can you, for anyone who's like, what the hell is that? Can you explain simply what tapping is?
Yeah. So essentially, it's like a mix of modern psychology with more kind of Eastern roots in something, for example, like acupressure, acupuncture. There's no needles. And through our body, a sort of meridian lines you may have heard of, people may have heard of, we're so much more than just the flesh and blood. And what you do is you tap on these points, which are mainly in your face. And as you tap, you trigger a response, which is a conditioned response, a pattern that comes from your brain, part of your brain called the amygdala. I also work with another part of the brain called the hippocampus, which stores memories. And the amygdala is the response, the stress response to an emotion. So what tapping does is it essentially interrupts that and allows you to neutralize and harmonize with your entire nervous system, which then allows you to look back at things with a sense of freedom. So they call it emotional freedom technique, which I'm a practitioner in. And now I've developed rapid tapping, slightly different, about manifesting things, and it's just a way of rewiring things that you might find unhelpful in responses that have been stored.
Yeah, so you physically tap yourself, don't you, like with the tips of your fingers?
Yes, I'm doing it now. Tap.
So I think it's really interesting that you've been through quite a lot of trauma in your life. Like, you know, we've both had the death of our dads, but you also had the blindness and the divorce. And now you're helping other people deal with their trauma. How do you think that works in your kind of mindset? Is that a way? What do you feel about helping people?
It's really everything to me. To help people to wake up to how amazing they are and can be and the possibilities that exist for them on the other side of the fear and the trauma. And trauma doesn't have to be anything massive either. Trauma is someone saying something to you that's stuck. And because I can help people to not feel so emotionally raw and to release them of the gremlins and the voices, there's nothing else I can do. Because once you've done that, once you've seen someone's life change because of it, something that you can help with, everything else just just was just surface to me. And I realized that I had stepped into my purpose and was living the vision I wanted to live. And so it's everything to me now. You know, and it's not just trauma I work with, but I'd say my main thing is helping people to really manifest, to create a life that they love, whatever that is for them and whatever that means to them, to remove things that are stopping them from doing that.
And do you think you've created a life that you love?
Yeah, I love my life. I feel content. I love pretty much, I've cultivated that feeling of contentment quite deliberately. And, you know, I would say to someone, always take heart that there will be that moment where you experience flashes of true convergence and joy. And after a while, your brain is very able to create new neural pathways all the time. Neuroplasticity is a thing. We can rebuild things, and then there will be a point at which you look around and you go, even if I feel crappy today, even if something's happened to me, even if an external circumstance has gone on, I'm okay. And that doesn't affect me. And I can unconditionally love myself no matter what. And I want people to know that that is not a pipe dream, because I certainly didn't years ago.
That's amazing. I want that. Do you, now you're, you know, 12 years on, you say you're content with your life. How do you view divorce now? And would you ever get married again?
I haven't got married again, but I would get married again. Wouldn't rule it out. But I am only looking for a soul, spiritual, absolutely knocked out experience. And that would be the only thing that would make me do that. If I knew and really knew, there was no element of any doubt that this was the joining of two whole people who add value to each other and are not trying to form some, you know, codependent form where you're sort of leaning into each other's hurt. So I think I'm pretty serious about that. And actually something I've only just started to go, actually, if we start to think of ourselves like the queens that we are, you know, it sounds a bit trite and naff, the queens that we are, but it's true, then you've got to be also available only for a king, right? Or whoever you like, you know, queen and a queen, king and a king, whatever. But you've got to make sure that that person is going to raise you up. And so that to me is now what marriage is.
I love that. And do you think you would approach, apart from finding that person, do you think you would approach the process of marriage differently now that you've been divorced? Like, would you do a prenup or arrange your assets or any of that?
Yeah, good question. I think, yeah, I probably would. Yeah, I think I'd approach it differently. I think I'd approach it differently in so many ways. God, and I'm just a different person. Just so different, you know? God, that was like 20 years ago I got married. So, yeah, I don't know. Would you get married again?
Yeah, I would. I want several more wedding days, whether it's with the same person or not. I think I love the party and the feeling of being married. But yeah, I think I would approach, so obviously with the right person, but I think I would approach it differently with the kind of now knowing how you come out of a marriage.
Yes.
And all that paperwork and all that. I'd maybe set some things, you know, be more practical about it and set some things in place before, which sounds sort of a cynical way to go into a marriage. But actually, I think it would make life so much easier in the end. It's like, I was going to compare it to dying, actually, but I do think that's not a good comparison. But, you know, like, I think if you prepare how you want, you know, your funeral to be, and whether you want to be cremated or, you know, buried or what sort of, you know, celebration you want, then it's easier for your family or friends when they get there to do it for you. So that's what I want to do with divorce.
The beauty and magic of your next marriage. Woo!
It's like a funeral.
Yeah.
Lucky them. So just to sort of round off, I wondered if you'd do a little tapping with me that might help maybe people going through a divorce.
Let's do it, love.
Yeah, maybe we could pick an emotion that people might be feeling during this divorce time. So maybe that idea that everything's awful and you're not going to be okay.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll start by, so you see, basically, I'll try and explain this without seeing me, but if you go to your collarbones and cross your hands over them, yeah, and then you go down a little bit, you'll feel like this kind of sore spot. It's called the sore spot. Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit sore. Yeah, so that's good. So we want to massage there, and then we want to say how we're feeling. So we'll say, I feel, and then if you fill in the blanks, yeah, and then for those listening, you can fill in your own blanks. Just tell me how you feel when you think about, you know, the rough stuff. I feel
sad.
I feel sad
because sometimes everything feels overwhelming and like it's piling up on top of me.
And when you think about that, and you think about, let's say, this kind of scale of emotion where plus 10 is absolute joy and bliss right now and minus 10 is absolute despair, where would you be at on that frequency scale?
-4.
Okay, yeah, so -4. So then we're going to say,
we're still massaging.
We're still massaging.
Joining in.
Keep massaging. Get your score. And then we'll just go through that again. So I feel sad.
I feel sad.
Because?
Because everything is piling on top of me.
But I choose to love and accept myself anyway.
Still massaging.
Yeah, still massaging. Say it again. I feel
sad because everything's piling on top of me.
But I choose to love and accept myself anyway. Good. And then we're going to tap in between the eyebrow points. So it's between eyebrows on the bony bits. And just say, I feel sad. And then we're going to tap with both hands either side, like on the temple side of eyes, yeah?
Because everything's piling on top of me.
Underneath the eyes, tapping.
And I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed, yeah. So under the nose, tapping. I feel overwhelmed. Tapping on the chin. I feel overwhelmed. Tapping on the collarbone. Yeah, just underneath the collarbone. But I choose to accept myself for this feeling.
I'm just a human being.
With loads of emotions. And that's okay.
Top
of the head. I'm just a human being.
Like in a circle.
Top of the head, round in a circle. Tapping back on the in between the eyebrow points. And I choose to accept myself. So we'll take a breath here. So take a deep breath in through your nose. Just exhale through your mouth. Side of the eye. I choose to accept myself. Underneath the eye, even though I don't always. Underneath the nose. I know in the end I'll be okay. On the chin. I've done hard things before. Tapping on the collarbone. And I think I'll survive. So then just taking this time now, how are you feeling now? Just let me know.
Better. Smilier.
Yeah. So if that was an emotion, what would that be?
It's not quite happy, but it's like content.
Yeah. Good. So then we want to seal that in. I call it sealing it in, because this is a true emotion. This is a true affirmation you're creating now. So go back to eyebrow points, in between your eyebrows. I feel content.
I feel content.
Side of the eye, I feel content.
I feel content.
Under the eye, I feel content.
I feel content.
Under the nose, I'm content.
I'm content.
Chin, I'm content.
I am content.
And collarbones, I am content.
I am content.
Good. Take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. Put your hand, one on top of the other, over your heart. And just say to yourself, I feel content.
I feel content.
Smile. And then notice where you're at on that frequency scale again. Has it gone up? Have you raised your frequency?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm like plus 5 now.
Amazing. Amazing. So that's rapid tapping.
That's great. That's really set me up for the day. I genuinely feel better. I'm not just saying that because you're a guest on the podcast. It might not work for everyone, but it seems to really work for me, of like getting out of my head and just being more present. So where can people find you if they want to find out more about rapid tapping?
Yeah, so you want to head over to rapidtapping.com for all things rapid tapping. If you want to get tapping with me, there's a little kit that you can do with videos and tutorials and scripts and how to do it. And then if you want to do anything else with me, poppydalebridge.com. That's where I am.
And you're on Instagram as well. I'm rapid tapping.
Yeah. And Poppy Instagram. Well. Yeah. Just my name, Poppy Delbridge, and rapid tapping on Instagram.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and also giving me some rapid tapping. I feel great.
Yay. Great. I'm really glad. No, it was gorgeous, actually. It's so lovely to come and chat. And I think this is such an important thing that you're doing as well, because we've all got to support each other in this stuff, right? And we've got to be honest, we've got to be open, take the masks off. There's no time for them anymore when it comes to inner work. You know, we've got enough masks going on without masking our feelings. So I'm glad you do the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important, because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Please leave a review. Love you forever.